Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branter, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Matt. Hello, dear listener. Welcome back. It's the 33rd episode in season 3 of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. So admittedly, come on, season 1 was like 400 episodes. I know that. That's fine. But
I realised we're very close, Joe. I know this is almost early because actually, obviously, one podcast a week, I think we're still about 6 months away, but we are awfully close to episode 500.
Yeah, I've lost count now. I need to sort of add them all up, I guess.
I think. I mean, if you go by Apple or, Apple Podcasts or Apple Music, it says 477 episodes.
Oh, did they do that? Wow. Oh, that's pretty cool. Wow.
So, anyone got any suggestions for 500, then, let us know.
Big. Bring back the old team.
Yeah, I'm sure they're still alive. I'm sure they're still on that island that we left them on.
Yeah, or sack all of us and have a whole new team.
Oh, it's like, almost just like, all you get those detective dramas and you'd like, the first season is complete with a whole set of characters. Like, oh, God, it's amazing. And then they're like, oh, we're doing a second season. Totally different story.
Oh, you
totally
mean like,
different set of people.
You mean like True Detective?
True Detective, yeah.
It could be like we could do it like a James Bond reboot. So we'd still have Joe Branton and Matt Knight, but they'd be played by different people.
Mm. Actually, this, Joe, you didn't go to ArcTangent this year, did you?
It was last weekend.
There was, I was talking to someone in the office who went, just in terms of, on the theme of reboots and same people, but played by different actors. This person in the office said that they went to see a band where they're like totally anonymous. So they all wear masks. Everyone knows the name of the band members, but all the band members play all the instruments. But also they've got like other people, guest musicians that like come in as well, but because they all wear masks,
right,
but they all also play in the band, and then like they switch roles out, but everyone knows the name of the band members, but actually knows if they're actually on stage or not.
Isn't that band that have the Hagstrom Phantom Men?
No, that's Ghost.
Yeah, Ghost.
I think all of them but the lead singer.
Right.
But then I think in Ghost, the lead singers had like a different alter ego for every album.
I see.
They're a band that have totally passed me by, to be honest. Ghost.
Oh, yeah. They're not for me.
I kind of like the idea, but I've not listened to any of the music.
Well, what I really like is the Hagstrom Phantom Men. It's very cool. For listeners, if you've not checked it out, first of all, Hagstrom Sweden make absolutely fantastic guitars, like brilliant, interesting guitar company. Admittedly, whilst the stuff used to be Swedish and, small custom shop stuff, now it's all just designed by the Hagstrom team and it's all Chinese built guitars. They're very, very good. And they've sort of stuck to their roots a lot. They do a lot of sort of reissues or classically styled things after old Hagstrom models, including their 8-string bass, which is rather cool. But the Phantom Men for me was a big one, just because the RD model is something Gibson have just totally sort of abandoned, even though it's a really cool, really popular, relatively popular instrument.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so this is kind of the closest you're going to get. Fantomen, F-A-N-T-O-M-E-N, for anyone wanting to Google it, is actually Swedish for the Phantom.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
So there you go.
I see.
Did I imagine, Joe, you just mentioning Hagstrom, that Tim had a signature Hagstrom at one point?
He didn't have a signature Hagstrom, but he was endorsed by Hagstrom
for a while.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, Tim from My Band Polymath was, I think, at the time, Hagstrom were looking for like left-handed musicians because they did quite a big range of left-handed guitars. So Tim got one of their Les Pauls, which it's not the Viking. The Viking is their 335 style one. I can't remember without looking it up, but it was their Les Paul style instrument, which they do in like a Fender scale length and they do in a Gibson scale length. It's very cool. It's a really good guitar and like a. They, you know, it looks like you expect, but it's heavily chambered, so it's much more lightweight. And also, they do a couple of weird things on there. They've got an extra three-way that's like a bass cut, so you can get some really interesting tones out of the guitar with just a pair of humbuckers, which is pretty cool.
I'm still looking for that model. Super Swede?
Super Swede, I think, is the Fender scale length. Swede.
Oh, and then Swede, yeah.
Swede was the model.
And then also the Ultra Max, which I think looks very similar, but with maybe fancy tops. And then the Ultra Swede. Oh, yeah. They've sort of casually blended from sort of like 50s inspired Les Paul to private stock PRS in four guitar models. It's like the six steps of Kevin Bacon, but they've sort of gone for how can we go from Hagstrom to PRS seamlessly?
That's definitely what the Ultra Max does. They've got some really cool stuff. I always really like the Viking bass. I thought was cool, but the Viking model, it's like a got slightly sharper horns than you'd get on a 335. There's something of an slightly SG about the horns, but they're really cool. And I love the tailpiece. They do this large sort of offset tailpiece with like this Hagstrom coat of arms on the right on the end of it. It looks fantastic. It's very cool.
They actually do an HL550, which is kind of the classic. I don't know if it was Gibson that did it first or probably someone a little bit more retro, but they do an HL550, which is very much their big body jazzer with the mini neck sort of humbucker.
Very cool.
Yeah, kind of. I can't think of the Gibson Model Super 5 or whatever it was. And then you've got the kind of really nice tailpiece where the strings look like they just sort of float out of the bridge. Very cool. Very, very jazzy.
It's a Gibson very, L5, very I think you're thinking of.
L5, yes, maybe L5. But yeah, very, very cool. Very good if you love jazz.
Yeah, they are good. Actually, they do this whole range of things called Retroscape as well, which I think is what got him onto Hagstrom in the first place. They just don't do any of them left-handed, which he was sorely disappointed. And the Retroscape is way more like they are reissues or largely inspired from the original Hagstrom. So they've got that much more sort of 70s, I don't know, like sort of 70s Italian feel to them a little bit, where they're like, here's some really blocky looking single coils, you know, and it will be sort of like Strat or offset style thing. And it will just have everything. Like, I think the Impala and the H3, which they do in Retroscape, they have like bass six or Jaguar style switching, but I think there's something like six or seven of those little switches. Like it's almost half one side of the guitar made up by like pickup switches and various tone cut things. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a brand we talk about very often, but there you go. We found an inn with Ghost.
We did.
But they go for everything from Ghost to jazz. So, you know, fair enough.
Do a Pat Smear signature model as well, I think.
Yeah, their only signature is the Pat Smear, Phantom. Actually. Oh, other than the Phantom, which is weird because they don't actually class on their website. I know, very specific this, but yeah, they don't actually class that as the artist series. Under artist series on their website, only the Pat Smear. Maybe because the Phantom N is designed by them, but maybe not difficult to model as a specific artist signature if no one actually knows who they are.
Yeah.
Oh, it's that so. Signature one. Yeah.
For that band that are actually a franchise. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very weird. But there you go.
Indeed, indeed. So anyway, sort of off back onto the beaten track. How's your week been, Matt?
Good. I say very un-guitar related, but Joe, how often do you take all your guitars off the racks, take all the stuff off your desk and give everything a good old clean?
My goodness, you did that this week.
I did that
A clean or a clean and a restring?
No, just a clean. Not a clean and a restring. Can't have the cat if you're restringing because they just absolutely love a guitar string dangling off the end of a guitar neck, and I'm always worried it's going to poke them in the eye. But no, just before this podcast, just got everything down and gave it a good dust, a little bit of fast fret, keep the string sort of relatively. I mean, I don't generally put fast fret on before I play, but where I'm not playing stuff particularly often, it's good to have just put a bit of fast fret because it just keeps the strings a bit cleaner for a bit longer. Sure. But it's a good chance to just get everything down and have a bit of a jam around for a little bit and clean everything and dust everything. My room gets super dusty. Dust the desk, clean the desk because I work here, you know, I play here, and it's generally got toast crumbs and spilt coffee and stuff on it. So, you know, I've got to give it a clean once every now and then. But yeah, good chance to. I don't know. Again, question one, how often do you do it, Joe? And I'm not talking about string. I'm just talking about cleaning stuff and going, hey, I forgot I had that. I forgot what that played like. But also, I tend to reorder stuff in the rack so that things I don't play very often are closer to hand. I can just try and get, I mean, I played my SG today. I was just like, oh, yeah. Totally forgot about this guitar. Even I look at it every day. I just don't play it as much. And then I played my Tele and went, oh yeah, the jack socket's fallen out and the pickup switch doesn't work. I'm like, probably should go and get this set up. you just sort of forget, really, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, actually, kind of on that note, I was going through some old SD cards from cameras, just cleaning some up, just finding some space to film some things on, and I came across the raw footage from when we filmed you retrofitting that Bigsby onto your SD.
Oh yes.
All those years ago. What was the company that
it was that? I can't remember I ended up selling that or trading that for something with a guy named Jake from the Gig Rig. He was selling something and I had something and we did a trade. Towner, that was it. Very, very good. And it went to live on Jake's SG and he made much more use of it. One thing I did keep, though, was the String Butler, which we've talked about before.
Oh, yes, very cool.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Just because it gives every string like a completely straight, this almost like straight to the nut type thing, and it just keeps everything in tune. Bizarrely enough, I always thought about buying some sort of temperature and humidifier gauge just to like stick on the wall. Because I just don't know what it's like in here. And our flat gets like super, super hot. Almost all my guitars were almost completely in tune.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Like nothing had really slipped at all. And I put that down to good setup and just looking after your instrument.
Oh, there you go. And, you know, following on from last week, as you've got all your guitars down, are you still finding that you're not gelling with your Stratocaster?
So I played it again to this evening and was like, do you know what I think it is? And it's either I think it is or I've just watched a video on it and then gone, oh, maybe it's that, which is that pedal show put out an amazing video this week with Matt from Monty's.
Oh, yes.
Where Mick got his, Mick Taylor from the pedal show, got his 61 Strat refretted. And I'm like, I'm so used to bigger frets. And the frets on that Strat are so, the neck is really thin, which is unlike anything else I've really got here. And also the frets are super low.
Right.
And I'm like, and also, I had it strung up with 10s because I was like, maybe the Strat, you know, always 10s or whatever. It's, again, something in my head. And I'm like, actually, I think I should probably set it up with 11s. And it got me thinking about an interesting thing that I've kind of always thought about for a while, but forgotten now that I don't really work in a guitar shop and I'm probably not saying it as much, is I kind of want every guitar to play exactly the same.
Right.
I just want them to sound different.
Right, like
if I could,
okay.
I would have every one of my guitars play exactly the same as my Music Man.
I would just want them to sound
different.
Sure. Do you not think that them being set up differently contributes to how they sound? I mean, I certainly find that with bass. I think maybe my knowledge on what I want from guitar isn't refined or defined enough for me to know what the changes. I mean, I know I don't like low action. It you know, it makes you sound a bit, you know, everything sounds a bit metally with low action.
And you know what? I'm wondering if it's a similar thing on this Strat. And interestingly, in the video, I'm about three quarters of the way through. You know, they're talking about what makes the biggest difference, and you know, and they're saying everything makes a difference, and everything makes a unique combination for that instrument. And that instrument is very different from another instrument, but a really good setup makes a really big difference. And I've talked to Matt before and he's like, oh, bring it down to the shop. And obviously they're not in, annoyingly, not as close in London anymore. They're in Cheltenham.
Yes.
So, you know, maybe I'll have to take a trip and just stay up there for the day and then come back. But he did say once that they could refret it and kind of almost reprofile almost like a slightly different radius on the fretboard. But it got me thinking, you know, all of this going on the 2 hours before we podcast, I was like, is it worth realistically spending, I don't know, it's probably going to be like £300-400 when I'm like,
is it? Is that what it costs?
I think
wow.
It's expensive. Well, I mean, you know, you're paying for someone's experience and someone's time.
Oh, of course. I'm not disputing it. I just didn't realize that was the
well, I mean, again, it's not something you ever really have to have done that often unless you're playing all the time. I mean, you might in the future, but I you know, Joe, but I guess like perhaps you've never had to have a bass refretted.
I play so many different things. I'm so fickle that I don't think I ever play anything long enough to need that.
Yeah,
that said, I do my 60s jazz bass does get, you know, my 60s reissue jazz bass, that always does end up being the instrument I go back to. But nonetheless, I switch up, you know, and it's not like that just stays in storage. So I play that at rehearsals and gigs. I practice at home on a completely different instrument. So I don't even see that guitar unless I'm at a show. So,
but yeah, I mean, coming to your question, Joe, yes, the setup does make a difference. And I think some guitars will inherently play different because a Les Paul is a different scale length to a Strat. And they will play different. And perhaps actually what I mean is finding the right setup for that instrument that fits with what you want to do. But yeah, interestingly for me, that Strat, and I did play it for ages, and perhaps it's just having a bit of an off time. But I don't know. It's I just keep coming, you know, we said it last week, probably said it the week before, been saying it for years since then. It's just that, it is that Music Man, it's the combination of that neck, those stainless steel frets.
The James Valentine.
Yeah, and I just think, do I want to spend the money changing my Strat when maybe I could buy something cheap and cheerful and mess around with it a bit more?
Sure, yeah.
Don't know,
yeah,
so, you know.
It's always nice to have something a bit different, isn't it?
But then at the same time, it's like, what's the point in having something if you're not going to get the best out of it and you're not going to play it?
Sure.
You know, oh yeah, you're going to take it away from its original spec. And I'm like, doesn't matter if I'm never going to sell it and I'm always going to play it.
Yeah.
So like, you kind of got to think of it in that way as well, I guess.
You have to decide what you want from the future of that instrument, you know, I think, when you purchase a guitar. If you're going to start modding it, just accept that you're writing off that money for the instrument largely, you know. If it's just something you want to try for a while and then sell, then probably try and keep it to as original spec as possible. But I just think it's about deciding in advance what you see of the future of that guitar.
Yeah.
But yeah. In answer to your question about when I clean my guitars, then never. I never, ever clean them.
I
rarely restring, ever. I don't think I've ever restrung either harmony. Oh, no, I broke a string on the Harmony Silhouette and I replaced that one string.
Wow.
I'm terrible. Terrible at that sort of thing. I mean, I restrung the Grez, but that was because the strings were terrible that came with that. They were really old. But, rarely restring the... I mean, I restring my touring basses, but the basses that stay at home, virtually not at all. I never clean anything unless it's going to be in a photo shoot. I guess stuff gets cleaned then. And, you know, when you talk about, like, sort of getting something out, being like, oh, yeah, you know, I forgot how good this was and things like that. I was... Actually, we spoke about maybe a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, Alpha Male Tea Pie, our good friends, Alpha Male Tea Pie, were very sadly robbed at a service station in London, had all their gear nicked. Amazingly, Tom's pedal board was left behind.
I probably looked at it and went, what is this?
exactly.
What is that?
He lost all his tellies, and Ben, the bass player, lost his jazz bass, his precision bass, and his old Jeklo Rickenbacker 4001 that he'd just finished paying for from a friend's dad. It was an old one. So that was very sad for him. So I thought, he predominantly played a jazz bass, you know. And I was like, well, I have six, so I'm going to gift him a jazz bass. I haven't told him yet.
Listening to this podcast.
I was just going to send it to him. I've got his address, so I was just going to pop it in the post. But I picked a jazz bass that I was going to give to him. It was actually a jazz bass that you sorted out for me when we both worked at GAC. We got in this butterscotch. Someone came in and sold in like a butterscotch jazz bass with EMGs in it. And you guys alerted me that someone was selling in a butterscotch jazz bass for very cheap. So I purchased that, and that came on my first tour to Europe. But it's actually been at a friend's studio for the last 2-3 years. So I just called that friend up and was like, can I get this back?
Sure.
Yeah, he actually dropped it back to me, and I was like, mate, I can lend you another one of my basses if you need it for the studio. And he was like, no, you already have. I have one of your P basses too. I was like, I forgot I... but that's fine. But anyway, so I wanted to get a case. So I've got this cupboard in my office that's just full of cases. So I went in there, got a case out to put it in, opened the case up. There was another jazz bass in there that I forgot I owned.
Excellent. So
it was great. It was an old Greco, like early 70s, pre serial number jazz bass, which came in as part of the when I was doing the Harlequin Guitar Club. Dear listeners, if you started listening to us more than less than a year ago, I guess around a year ago, I used to do this thing called Harlequin Guitar Club, where I was getting pallet loads of busted Japanese import guitars from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and I was fixing them up and selling them over here. And it was one of the ones that came in, and I was like, "Wow, I'm going to actually just buy this for myself." So I was really happy to find that, because it is actually lots of fun. Truss rod doesn't work at all, and the neck is bananaed, but you can just about play it.
I think I remember you talking about that one before.
Yeah. I need to learn how to replace a truss rod, I guess.
Not
something that's in my ability wheelhouse at the moment, but
absolutely not. Good luck if you ever try it, but I think you will struggle.
We'll see what I can do. I can always put it in a vice or something. I don't know. I'll find a way because it is worth it. I was going to talk about the things I'd been up to this week as well.
How rude of me, Joe. What have you done this week? I was getting to it, but you just went on about how you you keep forgetting that you've got bases in every nook and cranny.
I really do. So this week, dear listener, I went to a bunch of shows. On Thursday night, I had the privilege to get to go to a wonderful venue, Coco, in Camden, in London, to see Mulato Asatke, who is very influential on my band Polymath, although it sounds nothing like it. He's basically the guy who invented, I've spoken about it before on the podcast, Ethio Jazz. A really interesting fella who in the 60s came over to the UK from Ethiopia to study classical music, started going to jazz clubs in and around London, found that he loved it, but he wanted to introduce African modes, which are five-note scales, into sort of Western music to sort of hybrid it. But nowhere in the UK in the late 60s taught jazz, not in a school sort of environment. So he left here and went to Berkeley, which was the only place in the US that was offering jazz as a thing to study. So he studied it there. And he invented his own modes and his own genre by creating Ethio Jazz. He's largely a vibraphone player, but he, of course, curates all of the music. So we went to see him. He's 75 now. And, he's just about sort of hobbling on and off the stage, he's got a fantastic band around him. He had a drummer, a percussionist who was largely playing a talking drum, which is, I think, one of the most remarkable instruments. You know talking drum, Matt? Have you seen those?
I do not know a talking drum. I will Google it as you describe it.
There are a couple of different ways you can play it. The way this fella played it is you hold it under your arm and you play it essentially with almost a hooked stick, and you squeeze and release pressure on the drum to change the note that you're hitting. But this guy was playing complicated melodies. It wasn't just going boop, 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 boop. He's not just going one way or the other. He's playing complex melodies by just, putting more pressure and less pressure on the drum under his arm, which was one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen.
Wow.
He was incredible. All the musicians were incredible. So drummer, percussionist, Mulato Asatke on vibraphone, as well as a couple of other things. He played an organ and a type of drum that I can't remember the name of. Then he had a trumpet player, a sax player who really led the band, and then a double bass player and a cellist. And the cellist spent half of the show with the cello sat on his lap like a guitar, and he was playing it like a guitar.
That's some serious finger strength there.
Yeah, it was one of the most incredible shows I've ever seen. Like, it was just, makes you want to give up.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? It sounds cheesy in some ways. And everyone from all different skill levels can get together and play music. It's a language that people can speak, and anyone at any level can play with other musicians and get some enjoyment out of it. If you're a beginner and you're playing with some sort of expert guitar player, hopefully they're a nice enough person to sit there and help you along, and you play and you get something out of it. But when you've got people that are so versed in that language. And they're talking to other musicians in that same language. It is just, I think for some people, certainly I think you feel this way, Joe, I certainly do as well, is that it's just really engrossing to watch.
Yeah.
And that's why I sort of love Zappa, and I love a lot of like free jazz, because I'm just,
it's
a lot of people just go, oh, it's just like, it's just noise. And I listen to it and go, there's two or three or five or whatever people having just this insane conversation, and you feed off their enjoyment of what they're doing on the instrument. And you can sort of, it's almost like listening to a language you know a little bit about. It's like, yeah, if you're listening to a little bit of someone having a conversation in, I mean, I know very, very little Japanese, but when you listen to it long enough and you pick out odd words and you know what things mean and your brain instantly translates it into a language you know, when you play guitar or bass or whatever and you hear someone do something that you sort of know, you kind of almost have that relation to it.
Sure.
And then, yeah, it's just that's what I love. I mean, I love listening to lots of types of music, but especially that kind of, same as you, Joe, that kind of jazz stuff is just, oh man, you get some really good people, it can be absolutely mind-blowing. Absolutely, yeah. Mind-blowing.
Yes, yeah, so it's difficult to report back on that gear-wise on a guitar podcast, because there literally was not a guitar player, but other than the cellist. But
I'm sure they're using some sort of pedal somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. But dear listener, I do thoroughly recommend Mulatu Asatke. If you can't, you know, work out how to spell that, I'm not going to spell it out on the podcast, or you forget the name. If you search Ethio Jazz on any streaming service, he will come up as, you know, he is the forefather, you know, the man who invented the entire genre. So, yeah, give that a look. It's really interesting stuff. But on Sunday, yesterday, I went back up to London to go to Victoria Park to see the final day of All Points East Festival, a fantastic 4 or 5 stage festival that takes place in Victoria Park every year across a few weekends. I've been before, always have great bands, and they had a returning headliner, my favourite artist of all time in the world, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, was headlining. And he was, of course, as usual, absolutely fantastic. Warren Ellis switching between his...
what a legend.
Yeah, what a legend of a man. Switching between playing fiddle and his Eastwood 4-string tenor guitar that he plays, which is fantastic. His sort of Mustang-shaped tenor guitar. It just sounds amazing, sounds fantastic. So that was really enjoyable. But there are a couple of other artists I wanted to talk about that I saw. The Smile, for one. Tom York from Radiohead, Johnny Greenwood. Their new project, which was very good, if a little not festival-y. You know, it was three fellas on a stage sort of facing each other playing without talking to the crowd for 45 minutes. So I'm not sure it was quite the right thing for a sunny afternoon festival, but it was very good. But most of all, Anna Calvi. Now, dear listener, if you've not checked out Anna Calvi, she's absolutely fantastic, just wonderful sort of retro rock and roll, sort of has sort of flavors of the White Stripes in there and things like that, and Nick Cave as well. And she's always interesting to watch. She's also, you know, curated the score for Peaky Blinders for the last two seasons, I think, as well, and worked with Nick Cave and also Jenny Beth from Savages, who was also performing at the festival. But one of the great things about Anna Calvi is that she is known for being a bit of a pain. Not a pain, but she wants her gear to sound the way she wants her gear to sound. She is unwilling. Now, I'm saying this as a positive. I realize opening by saying she's a pain, that makes it sound like a negative note. She's unwilling to relent on that stuff. So the sound she wants is her Vox AC30 turned up on full, and by Jove, that is what she's going to sound like. And I've seen her in a few smaller settings, and it's always just wonderfully loud. And the thing for me that was amazing is she was playing on the main stage at All Points East, and I swear we could hear that we were about halfway back, and the sound we could hear bang in the middle was coming from her AC30 in the middle of the stage, you know, rather than the huge speakers surrounding her. But yeah, she plays. Wow. She switched between playing her. She has like an older American standard Telecaster. It could be older than that, but she certainly put those single saddles on the telly. She always plays the neck pickup, but it sounds unbelievably brittle. A lovely sort of sunburst. I've forgotten if it's rosewood or maple necked. How about that?
I'm looking at some pictures. If you put Anna Calvi into Google, lots of her sunburst tellies have a maple neck, the one she seems to be playing the most.
Yeah,
seemed to have some sort of maple neck on it.
Yes, it was. It was just an incredible sounding instrument, and just just that she has a really minimal pedal board. I remember when she played a couple of years ago in Brighton, she played at a church, and a friend of mine was part of the crew, and he was able to take a snap of her pedal board for me. She had no switches or anything like that. The pedals were in like random angles and stuff. It was such an unorganized board. But there was like a big box Big Muff on there, which I think was responsible for an awful lot of her tone.
And just, interesting. I was trying to find some pictures of the pedal board. Doesn't seem to be that much around.
No. I'll have to dig it up. I have it somewhere. But she's playing a double amp setup. So it was one of the AC30, which she had a custom red AC30. And the other was a Marshall 1974X. I don't know how she was switching them on and off, but it was the most incredible sound. And then halfway through, she switched, much to my dismay, to one of the new American Professional Telecasters in the worst finish of all time, that awful Dark Knight, blue to black.
Oh, burst. Yeah. I've seen it in real life now, and I don't dislike it as much as I did when I saw pictures of it. Got to make some new colours at some point, Joe.
Yeah, sure. Fine, very well. But yes, that for me was the most remarkable sound. Dear listener, go and check it out. If you want some absolutely extreme guitar tones, a lot of her solos she does with like a slide, and it's just about noise now. She used to play more articulate solos on her early stuff, and it's just about these absolutely crazy sort of sprawling, manic, just noise. It's fantastic. It's just so visceral.
So you've got me. You've piqued my interest, Joe. If I'm going to go and commute to work tomorrow and put this on the old headphones, where do I start? Three records. It looks like three main albums. She signed to Domino, so one of the cooler labels. but any preference from you on records?
So the albums that she has, I think she has her self-titled album, then she has One Breath, and then she has Hunter. Those are the the three records. I think her first album is my favorite when it comes to like guitar solos and guitar tone.
Okay.
It's also a good place to start. I think she has some great songs on there, some great soaring sort of Wild West esque vocals. I know that sounds weird, but I don't know how else to put it. That's a perfect point to get into Anna Calvi, because she definitely gets weirder, and I think by the time you get to the third record, Hunter, she has some fantastic stuff, like the song itself, Hunter as a Man, Alpha, I think, is one of her best ever songs. They're all fantastic. But she'll go down some weirder routes, like, for example, if you put on, she's got an EP that's come out after those records, and one track is literally just her breathing. Okay. So she's not afraid to make just weird stuff as well. So maybe safest to start at the beginning and hear where she came from. But I think for brutal Telecaster into, maximum volume into a Vox AC30.
Okay.
The self-titled album is the place to go.
I will do it and report back.
There you go. Yes, as you should. Yeah, so I'll be interested. Yeah, let me know next week what you think of Anna Calvi. And do listen as well, dear listener, if you haven't already. She is absolutely fantastic. And just a modern-day guitar hero. Cool. Give it a listen. Anyway, we were going to do a little new segment, which actually we want your feedback on, dear listeners. So let us know what you think about us reintroducing a handful of segments. This segment, we're going to call What's in the Watchlist, and we're going to talk to you about some gear that's piqued our interest each week. Matt Knight, starting with you. So this, dear listener, will be mostly things from eBay or Reverb, something like that. Don't worry, US listeners, we're not going to just pick stuff that's available in the UK. We'll find things that are available all over, and make sure we're talking about those as well. As you know, to be honest, there's so much more gear in the other side of the pond than there is here, so.
I know, it's I keep getting like loads of YouTube shorts of, like, there seems to be a trend at the moment of people like going to garage sales, and just like picking stuff up and flipping it on eBay and right. You know, whatever. And I think you might find, I was having a similar conversation with my dad recently, who sold a classic car. My dad used to like buy and sell a lot of classic cars, and the thing is now with the internet, and especially specialist websites like Reverb, which are great, you know, everyone's an expert. And everyone wants the most they can ever get. You know, even if you go to our equivalent in the UK, like a car boot sale, when you see like gear or specialist stuff, as records or, you know, turntables or music rated gear or hi-fi or anything like that, like people know what it is, and there aren't as many bargains, should we say.
Yes, absolutely.
Although I do like the fact that Reverb does have the kind of what's on offer. So you can look at stuff in the UK that people have just discounted, which is always quite good. But I guess this section, or the gear we're talking about here, is more stuff that's just interesting rather than stuff that might be a deal. But we'd hope that maybe some listeners might end up buying the stuff. So for me, on the watch list at the moment, I've got a very it's very, very bizarre, but I really want it. It's a 1988 Galleon Kruger MLS guitar amplifier stereo power head, 2x60 watts. This is a solid state guitar amp from Galleon Kruger from the 80s.
It looks like a portable radiator.
It does look like a portable radiator. So actually, they say power head. This is preamp and power amp, so you can go straight out into the back in two speakers and run it in stereo. I think stereo means that you can run two minimum 8-ohm speakers. And you've also got a stereo line out, which is post output level. But let me run you through the front. So you have a lead channel with boost and a shape control, clean, which is just volume, treble, bass, and then a high and a low mid EQ, an output level. And then on the front, you've got a effects send and return. And you've also got a line out, which feeds into the stereo line out, which I think you can have mono or stereo. So you can actually use it as a line out from the front, or you can use it as a stereo return. So interestingly, you could run a stereo delay into the effects loop and then out into two cams. Just really cool. Galleon Kruger, I remember talking to someone in our office who's a bit older, who remembered in the 80s when Galleon Kruger, I think they made another guitar amp, which was basically this, but a combo. And I think it was really famous in the 80s for being like, if you're not using a JC, you're basically using one of these. It was a 200 watt combo for guitar. Yeah. In the 80s, which I think was like super clean. The 250 ml. I've just found it. The Galleon Kruger 250 ml.
Look this up.
So this was kind of like, I guess the equivalent of, yeah, it was a pretty heavy combo, 22 pounds.
Wow.
I guess that's not super heavy. But yeah, I think a 2x50 watt stereo output combo was basically the same sort of feeling. So super clean.
Yes, I recognize this combo because they did a bass version that was very similar, that was favored by like people like Pink Floyd and stuff.
Yes. So this MLS, which I guess is the head version, is a really good clean pedal platform. It's got a distortion channel, which apparently used by Gary Moore at some point. I'm just into it. I think this is really cool. I like sort of weird and wonderful guitar amp heads. I like things that are effectively super clean, and, you know, could be a really good pedal platform. So yeah, if you're running for sure. two amps, I think this is cool. But I like the idea of the stereo effects loop and then running that out into two speakers or two cabs.
£450.
Yes, I don't think that's too bad. I've never seen another one, so I've got nothing to judge it on. But yeah, very tempted. That was, I don't know. I like it. And I feel that you're probably going to get a better deal on guitar amps from the 80s.
Yeah.
At the moment, before guitar amps from the 80s become way too expensive.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. £450, £15 shipping. Looks like it was listed less than a month ago, so you could well go. And 17 watches on Reverb at the moment. So.
One of them is me. Is one of them you, dear listener? Are you going to buy this from under my feet? Probably. Or please, hopefully, and report back.
This does look great. I love the idea of like high-powered solid-state guitar amps, especially when they're offering, you know, the fact that it's a stereo head. This is kind of surprisingly versatile, I guess. If this was in an updated, modern-looking chassis and released by a more in-vogue brand, people would be raving about this sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess it's it's the probably the vintage, dare I say vintage, equivalent of something like DV Mark.
Yeah.
Doing a similar thing. So just think about a DV Mark that was made 30 years ago.
Oh, it's definitely not attractive, dear listener. It looks awful.
yeah, definitely. There's been some good aesthetic choices in the last 30 years. But yeah, I guess that's what they're going for. Small, portable, high powered, fits in a rack maybe, but yeah, kind of cool, caught my eye, sits there in the watch list this week amongst many others.
There you go.
What about you, Joe?
For me this week, so it was hard for me to choose one thing because there's always a lot of stuff in my watch list, dear listener, but in an aim to sort of move away from talking about, I realized over the last few weeks I have talked a lot about vintage pedals a lot of the time, electro-harmonics. Now, we are actually going to come back to electro-harmonics a little bit later in the podcast, but I just wanted to move away from that. I felt like I'd sort of... If you, dear listener, aren't interested in that sort of thing, you've had a boring few weeks of me talking. So, something did come up for me recently, around at the same time that Matt's thing was listed. 21 days ago, I got a little message to say that something, some keywords that I look out for, has appeared on Reverb. And it is, of course, a Squire Hello Kitty Stratocaster.
Joe, would it shock you to know that I am watching exactly the same listing?
33 watches, which is surprisingly low, I thought.
Do you know, it was interesting because I'd seen a couple of these. I think I just randomly, you know, we talked about it a lot many moons ago on the podcast. Probably didn't help the hype train at some point, which was definitely going at full force. And then I thought about it the other day and was just like, are people still selling these? Are they still crazy money? And they are kind of still crazy money, but I think the people that actually ever wanted them for the reason they wanted them have bought them and are now. Yeah. And then I think this one feels like someone who maybe bought one many moons ago and it's like, oh yeah, it's probably worth some money now.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Like, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. It's just that it's seemingly unmodded and it's actually very hard to find. Well, a lot
that
of the
is
time,
true.
When I
that
look for a Hello Kitty Strat on the internet, most of the time it's like, here's just the body without the plate or the pickup or anything. Or, you know, it's often doesn't have the neck. If they do come up, they've normally been modded. Normally it's something like an Invader, a Seymour Duncan Invader. Because, dear listener, if you're not familiar with the Hello Kitty Stratocaster, this is simple. I don't know if it's shorter scale, actually. I'm not sure.
No, it's regular, it is it? I think it's definitely Full size. Right, I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is.
So it's just a pink Stratocaster, but the scratch plate is the Hello Kitty head on a slight angle. Single humbucker in the bridge, hardtail bridge, and a single volume control. Lovely little touches on the neck. It's a maple neck, and it has pink dot inlays, which I think is a lovely little touch. The old black Squire logo, which is normally associated with the Affinity range, I think the tuners, I'm not sure, there's no picture of the back of the neck, so I don't know. You know, you get those closed gear tuners on all the Affinity stuff, so I don't know if that's the case on this, but yeah, this is surprisingly unmodded, and they're normally modded, they normally have stuff done to them.
I would say the only thing, I'm actually watching a couple as well, Joe. The only thing I'd say about the one that you are talking about at the moment, there's one on Reverb for about 500 ish. Looks like it's had a few stickers, looks like the paint's slightly faded. Right. There is another listing for the same guitar for a little less money, although they're asking crazy shipping prices. But still comes with some form of case and the Fender Hello Kitty strap, which has the kind of Hello Kitty logo in black leather and then is pink. And it's a very, very cool strap. You can still find them. I found one for sale, but I don't really want to pay 50 quid for it. So, but yeah, you're right. These are usually modded and then kind of stupid, but once they're modded, they're basically worthless.
Yes, well,
because I think they're so specific to the person who
exactly
wants it. That's the problem, isn't it?
And I think that's reasonable. I think it's silly when people relist these things that they've been customized to the point where they're not really, you know, the thing that we're all looking for, and they still want big bucks for it. This one's listed for £500 on the nose with £50 shipping, but it's completely unmodded. And so for me, that's like, well, that's, if I was going to get Hello Kitty, that's what I want. I want it because it's a wonderful piece of history. And I actually don't think I would mod it. I think I want it because it's such a crazy thing that Squire did, and they've never really done anything as weird since. Certainly nothing that's resonated with people as much as this has.
No, and on a parallel to that, the one thing we've talked about before, which again, don't think there's any available, but it would 100% be on my watch list if one came up. In fact, actually, that's a lie. There is one in America. I'm not going to pay the money they are asking for it, but the Bad Bats Maru Bronco,
yes,
which
is black but has the
character. But yeah, no, they haven't really done anything. The straps seemingly sell for anywhere between $30 and $180. So I'm not going to pay $180 for the strap. But yeah, there you go. The Hello Kitty. I can't think of anything they've done unless there's some Japanese Squires, perhaps, or other guitars that you do get a lot of Japanese exclusives. Right. Certainly when I've been over there, brands like ESP, for example, have lots of signature basses that are kind of quirky and have like different characters and stuff like that. But the Hello Kitty feels like the original and certainly the one that people bought and modded.
Yes, yeah. Well, I guess there you go, dear listener. That's our picks for this week: a 1988 Galien Kruger MLS guitar amp and a Squire Hello Kitty strap.
Oh, imagine both of those in a rig. I mean, you would be rocking stages from Kent to Hull with that.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I wanted to return to something that we talked about last week, Matt. Last week, I was going on about the Big Muff reissues, the wonderful range of Big Muff reissues, because of course we were talking about the Ram's Head,
the J. Mascus Ram's Head Big Muff, and then we went through every single Big Muff, mm-hmm. Which yeah you can listen to in detail from last week's. But yeah, every single Big Muff, and you said you were going to go and listen to a shootout video, Joe.
I did.
And come back with the one that you were going to buy.
Yes, I did. So I listened to that shootout video. I shared it in the Guitar Nerds group as well for people to weigh in, and it was great actually. I got some great suggestions on other Big Muffs that I could potentially be looking at that are non-electroharmonics.
Okay.
Makes, but you know, like and there are some great suggestions in there. It's just, you know, yeah, I know that like buckets of companies make them. I kind of want an electroharmonics one, you know, half because they're so affordable, really. You know, it's great that everyone does, you know, do a Big Muff, and that they probably are sort of modded to fix certain things or maybe sound a bit better, but then they're, you know, they're 250 quid plus. I love that these are whatever, 70, 80 quid.
Yes, I guess, sorry Joe, you go. I guess, yeah, we should just quickly go by saying that last week we talked about the J Mascus Big Muff, and since I've read an article written by my good friend Stefan, who does the blog Guitar Pedal X, and he was pointing out a couple of things that he bought one. I think it hasn't shipped yet, but it turns out the J Mascus Big Muff that was a Reverb exclusive is actually exactly the same as the previous Electroharmonix V2 Violet Ramhead Big Muff pedal in the compact enclosure they released a year or so ago. Which I believe you can still buy. Yes, you can still buy from many UK retailers. It's just got a different graphic on the front with a slightly different colour. So much more of a kind of ballpark version of J Mascus' original Ram's Head Big Muff. They recommend, and Joe, you might have had some other recommendations, but they recommend the J Mascus Garbage Face or Garbage Face Junior by Wren and Cuff Pedals. They actually make what they are kind of calling it is a sort of warts and all exact replica of his exact early 70s Ram's Head Big Muff, which he purchased and tore in 1987 and has used since. And that is the exact same model that they worked really closely together to make sure that their unit, the Garbage Face, was the dead-on replica. They also do a bigger version in the Garbage Face. So, yeah, that's the Garbage Face Junior. They do the standard Garbage Face, $349. It's also got a vintage germanium treble boost side, and you've got two different volumes, so you can have a normal volume and a super loud volume, which, as we know, J Mascus plays super loud,
very loudly. Yes.
indeed. So yeah, it's just one suggestion, but just thought an update to anyone who listened last week. And it's a bit of investigation. Turns out, only because I was about to hit the buy button, wanted to find out a bit more. Turns out That's the vibe.
Interesting. Yeah, well, one of the ones that interested me most that was an alternative suggestion that I got from Peter Darling. He suggested the Triangulo Labs. I don't know that them. Dear listener, you know what I'm talking about. They're Scarfuzz, which is inspired by the violin-like scar tissue lead sounds from John Frusciante.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, which is pretty cool. So that's a faithful reproduction of the early 2000s NYC Big Muff, often called the Frantone Big Muff.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool. There's a clean blend on this, as well as two foot switches as well. I don't know what the second foot switch does.
This brand, actually, they make a lot of kind of John Frusciante-inspired guitar pedals. But yeah, it looks like you've got... You know, sometimes I get having odd names on on pedals, but when you've got a switch that says no name, and then when you look at their website and then it just says extra features, no name, question mark.
It doesn't just give you the information.
So we have no idea what this actually does. But there you go.
I hope it's nothing. I hope it's not wired to anything.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it would be interesting if they just went, yeah, there you go. There was, on a side note, there was, I think Andertons did an April Fool's many years ago.
Yeah, that's right. They did
with Wampler. And they did that kind of thing where it was like,
like the placebo effect pedal or something.
Yeah, the psychoschematic boost or something like that. And they were like, oh, I've got people say, oh, it's way better. And then they were like, it's just turning a buffer on and off. But yeah, very, very cool. But yeah, actually, I hadn't seen this before. Triangulo Labs, TRIUNGULOAB. Very weird, stupid way to pronounce Triangulo.
It's probably the guy's name, Matt.
It's not. It's a weird way of saying. I think they're from Italy, so maybe it's the Italian way of saying triangle. But yeah, interesting that they're going after the early 2000s, basically Frantone one. Fran Blanche, who actually has a really good YouTube channel, and she looks into a bunch of different technologies and all sorts of stuff. She had Frantone pedals. I think she designed this reissue for Electro-Harmonix. And that's the one that I guess it's just like, it was just an off-the-shelf purchase in like 2006 or whatever. It's changed since then. But yeah, kind of a famous version of the old Big Muff Pie in the big box. So that's very, very cool. I mean, interestingly, I would have suggested... Well, I would have previously perhaps suggested the JHS Muffuletta.
Oh, yes, of course. The Big Muff with seven Big Muffs in it.
The Big Muff with seven Big Muffs in it. But interestingly, there is also, and this is much more recent, this year actually, Anna Sounds released a 7-in-1 modular dual channel Big Muff where it's got the kind of modular circuit boards in, so you've got a triangle, a ram's head, the kind of black and red classic pie, the black Russian, the green Russian, the Civil War, and the op-amp version. And you can have two in at once, and you can switch between the two, which is very, very cool.
That is cool.
I guess similar, again, there's a few people doing that, but also similar to, what was the other brand, Joe, that we've had that was very good, and you could put in a Rat or a Big Muff or a Tone Bender.
You're talking about Jackson Audio.
I am talking about Jackson Audio. Yes. Again, another good choice for that kind of
modular pedal. Kind of thing.
Yeah, indeed. But also for if you didn't want to go down the Electro-Harmonix route. I mean, the great thing about, as you mentioned, the Electro-Harmonix route for Big Muffs is the fact that they are incredibly cheap compared to a lot of the boutique competition. You know, the great thing is that you can pick most of these up for anywhere between sort of like $50 secondhand and up, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think even the main ones are only, $70 to $100.
Yeah, it's just amazing prices from Electro Harmonix for still something that sounds great. You cannot fault them. They sound fantastic.
I know. They have a sound all of their own, and they just sound very, very good. If you want to do a real deep dive, I would highly recommend heading over to Stefan's blog, Guitar Pedal X. He's done a breakdown here a couple of years ago now, but 28 of the best compact Big Muff fuzz pedals.
Oh, I need
all seven varieties.
Wow.
Definitely worth a deep dive into that. You forget how many are actually out there.
Well, that does sound like something I definitely need to check out, because I watched the shootout video, obviously, I put up here. I don't know if you did, Matt, in the end. You
were going to do it afterwards. A few bits of it and then went, I'll just take them all.
is that where you... Can you pick a favourite for you?
I think we said probably the Nano Big Muff, like the op-amp one, the Billy Corgan one, because that's obviously the one that I've got an original and,
And that's the
close
sort
to
of
that
sound you want. That yes, sort of 90s it is just that wall of sound.
It's almost so heavy that it doesn't feel heavy in some ways. It's just a great sort of super thick distortion sound, which I absolutely love.
Almost synth. It's almost like a, that sort of it makes everything so on or off. Like, it, you lose all dynamics. It's just a big note.
Yeah, exactly. And loads of sustain and stuff. It's, they're wicked.
Mm. Well, I couldn't choose. I settled on two. I settled on the two that I liked the most, which I think was the triangle. The triangle is the one I think I'm going to get for Tim. I think that's more his flavour. And the green, I just really liked for myself. So I'm going to pick the Green Russian and see how that sounds on bass, actually.
That, I think, as I mentioned last week, that is the one where I think, yeah, the guy from Weezer, Scott Schreiner from Weezer, used one. I think that's generally seen as one of the better versions for bass. But the Triangle Big Muff, I think, good choice. You know, not the kind of big, you know, wall of sound thing. It's a lot of gain, but yeah, almost a little bit more of the kind of vintage.
Yeah, it's still articulate, I think, which was important.
Yes, I think that's a good way to put it. Absolutely.
But yes, we will see. So that's, I'm gonna pick those up, I think, this week, and then I'll report back, dear listener, on how I'm getting on. Now, we've kind of come to the end of this week's podcast. We're going to head over onto the Patreon, where we're going to be taking questions from our Patreon group. In fact, we're going to do this moving forward. Should we talk about this now?
Yeah, let's talk about it now.
So we're going to be taking over on our Patreon each week. We're going to take questions from the group, because, to be honest, recently there have been some great questions on the Facebook group. So we are going to pick questions from Facebook and use it as a topic in our Patreon episode. And each week, if you are selected, if we choose your question and answer your question on the episode, all you need to do is get in touch with us with your address, and we'll send you out a pack of Guitar Nerds plectrums just to say thank you for helping us,
all that support,
all the support, and for giving us a topic that we wanted to talk about. So feel free, dear listeners, to ask your questions on the Facebook group each week, and we'll make sure we're covering at least one every week, and you will get a pack of very nice Gravity plectrums. They're 1.5 mil Gravity picks with the Guitar Nerds logo on them. We'll send out a pack to you if you do that. So yes, we're going to do that. We're answering John Bye's question for something like the third week in a row, because he just asked great questions. So this week we're going to talk about which artist's rig / tone do you currently admire. He's on an Incubus kick at the moment and loving the Mike Einzinger tone. So we're going to go over and talk about that. I also want to talk to Matt. I want to pick Matt's brains about the new Boss Cubes. It's a guitar cube and a bass cube that have come out. They look really interesting and cool. So we might talk about that a bit. If you want to join us over on Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds, you can become a supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you get this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special and our entire back catalogue. $10 gets you the lot. Plus, I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on all your favourite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye. Leading.
bed with Sarah Sherman and James Doyle.
Yeah.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.